The wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Welcome to Dragmount. I'm Kathy Campbell.
I'm Rajiv Mote.
And I'm Maureen Carr. Today we are talking about episode 6 of season 2 of The Wheel of Time. This episode is called Eyes Without Pity. It was directed by Maja Villarvillo and written by Rami Park.
Whew, man. Rami Park just knocked Intense. It out of the park. This episode, the writing was...
Ha ha ha, nice.
Yeah, you like that? Yeah. Definitely was planned. this episode is so intense. You can tell that they are hurtling towards the end of season 2, and there was not a break or breather. Well, I was going to say not at all, but I mean, there kind of is one bit that was just kind of like lackluster in this episode. I bet Rajiv knows what I'm talking about.
I do. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this was a tough episode, and, the way I described it to you guys on Dragonmount was just there were so many things just going to hell, and this episode has no catharsis. That catharsis comes later in the subsequent episodes. I saw on Twitter someone was mapping kind of episode numbers to the sort of classic screenwriting arcs, and episode 6 in an 8-episode series will usually map to sort of the all is lost phase of a screenplay, where, you know, all of the characters are at their lowest points. It seems like everybody is ground down, destined to fail, and the recovery then comes in the 7th and 8th episodes. Really, the 7th is the turnaround, and the 8th is the kind of denouement. But boy, was this a low point for our heroes?
Yes,
yeah, in the best way. I think the acting in this episode is like, just thinking about specifically Egwene's scenes, I have goosebumps. Just because I felt it more than I read the books. I think this episode in particular is one that is really showing the power that you can get from this visual medium in a way that the books weren't able to even begin to touch.
Right.
And
we should definitely talk about this when we deal with Egwene's scene.
Yeah.
But I think you want to save that for the end.
Because yes.
It's sort of the opening and closing of this episode dealing with Egwene.
Exactly. So, yeah. Something I like about this show that it has been doing is it seems like the first part of the show is also touching with the ending of each episode. So it kind of sandwiches on either side. But we're not going to start there. Instead, we're going to start where last episode ended, with that gorgeous shot of the gorgeous Lanfear in that gorgeous costume on the gorgeous throne with a gorgeous man tied to a wheel, shall we?
And a beautiful desert, too.
And a beautiful desert, yes.
It was a beautiful desert.
Oh my gosh, seeing more of Lanfear's costume was everything to me. I love how completely different it is from anything else that we've seen. Like, obviously, we saw a little bit of it before, but she just really woke up, but she went to sleep and was like, this is what I'm going to wear. Boom, nailed it. Oh my gosh. And it makes it so much more dramatic with that wasteland and just that nothingness desert. I thought it was so powerful, the choices that they made there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that thing that's a very on the nose metaphor that she has Rand bound to the wheel of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, of course, her, that's, of course, her point that she's making is you're a prisoner. And there was a way to get free of this. And that is something that Ishmael talked about in the previous episode. He wants to stop the wheel. He wants a sort of perverse moksha from the wheel of the cycle of rebirth. So all he has to do is thematic point.
He just has to ask to be released. You know, that's all he has to do. It'll happen. Yeah.
Well, I love that little interplay. It's like, you know, why should I trust you? And he kind of gestures at his bonds and she goes, oh yeah. And then releases him just like that. Which played in two ways to me, and I'm not sure where I land on this. On one hand, she's manipulating him, which there is an aspect of that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, she really does seem to, like, want him to sympathize with her or wants him to trust her. So she's doing these terrible things, but she's also, there's almost this weird kindness about her when he's doing what she wants.
She wants him to want to do what she wants her to do. She wants him to join her on his own behalf. Like wants it to be a partnership. Obviously, her above, but like
yes.
Yeah. Wants to have this agreed upon in a way that obviously Ishii doesn't, which I and love that
she called him Ishii.
Calls him Ishii.
Yeah, that was so cute.
I love that. So now I feel even better about the fact that I can never say his name properly. So I will continue to call him Ishii, just like Lanfear does.
Just like Lanfear. And you know, this power dynamic and this sort of wanting to be partners but in an unequal way will have some resonance with how Egwene's arc goes too, in a much more brutal fashion. But there are people trying to control other people in the weirdest ways in this episode.
Indeed. And Lanfear just wants Maureen out of the picture and will do whatever she can, including, you know, play with Rand in the dream world. It clearly works. And Rand is also, I think, really frustrated with the truth that he is learning from Moraine. The fact that Loghain, yes, she brought Loghain to Kyrian because she wanted Rand there. These levels of manipulation that he knew she was doing but didn't really know. And it just keeps getting laid out more and more, and it's got to be frustrating.
It's kind of like Lanfear says, hey, Moraine's manipulating you from the shadows, I'm gonna manipulate you right in front of your face. Like, which would you rather?
Like, at least I'm honest with my manipulation.
Right.
And they strike a bargain, right? So what Rand wants is to know where Ishmael is and what he's planning. And Lanfear says, okay, this is my condition. You do not stay near Moraine, otherwise Moraine dies. And that suits Rand just fine. He is someone who, like his predecessor Lyf Luz Theron, decides to go it alone many times and wants to leave behind his friends. Apparently he did that in his previous life as well.
Something I saw online is this idea that the Forsaken or the Chosen, depending on what side you're on, are only calling Rand the Dragon, not the Dragon Reborn. And I think that, like, people are complaining, well, not everyone, but there are people that are making commentary and complaining that it's a mistake and that obviously this shouldn't be, like, this is written incorrectly. But it almost makes sense to me because the Forsaken are living in this like mindset world of everything is not just the current age and the ability to see, you know, kind of what the bigger picture is. So of course it's going to be the dragon because the dragon has always been reborn. It will keep
Luce Theron was the dragon reborn too.
Yeah. So. And so
absolutely
just wanted to state that for the record that, I think the writers might know what they're talking about and that everything is purposeful, but you know, that's just me.
I think it works for the cosmology that they've described here.
Indeed. Indeed. So Rand is going to have another dream in this episode though, which is much less happy. Shall we say? I guess.
Well, it's an echo of the dream that we had in the first episode, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Where it was Rand almost sees exactly.
All of his friends dead at his own hands.
And with this time, Heronmark's sword, in fact.
Yeah. And this time we see that it's Ishamael who's created this dream. And he says, just wanted to show you where you're headed. This is the end point of the madness that comes from channeling the one power like you do without the Dark Lord's protection, of course. And so Ishamael is taunting Rand that way. But wow, Lanfear appears.
Yeah.
And banishes Ishamael in a puff of smoke and says, what's the quotation? It's wonderful. If he doesn't want you here, you shouldn't be here, Ishi.
Ishi, dear, if he doesn't want you to be here, then you shouldn't be.
And she waves him away like smoke, which is really interesting. The Forsaken here, Ishamael is not... People aren't obsequious around Ishamael like they were in the books. He's got Surath mouthing off to him. He's got
he's kneeling down in front to Turok.
Yeah.
And Lanfear is saying, "Yeah, of course I'm going to betray you," and is shoving him aside. But you know, Ishamael knows what's going on. He is playing the long game, and he's not letting ego into it. So.
I mean,
I think this is all to a purpose.
I almost am wondering if Ishi is actually there at all, or if this was a creation that Lanfear made. Maybe. Just because
plots.
Yeah, because the dream was the same. I can imagine it would be easier for Lanfear to kind of just pull it and repeat it. But why? You don't need to have anyone agree to do anything if you can just recreate him and like then of course he'll leave, he won't cause any problems.
Yeah,
it'll be
a good idea,
that perfect, you know, manipulation, and then she can come in and be all, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, you're right, why should you trust me, and be the perfect little girlfriend and be like, look, I could show you anyone.
Well, and Lanfear's telling him that she's been the one protecting him all along. Like, ever since her release, she hasn't seen the fiery-eyed, or he hasn't seen the fiery-eyed man in his dreams because of her protective hand.
Which is all the more reason that I think that...
It makes sense. That she might have been behind even Ishamael.
Yeah, in that part of the dream. Yeah,
but it's interesting. I was afraid for Rand for a moment because Lanfear admits she needs to give him a reason to trust her, and she says, "I will show you anyone. Just ask."
Yeah.
And Rand says, "Anyone?" I go, "Rand, don't do it. She's gonna." But sure enough, she's good to her word to an extent, and she shows Rand Egwene. Egwene, who is a prisoner of the Seanchan right now, which we'll get to. And They don't really have the opportunity to exchange any meaningful information, but they are aware of each other. Rand almost touches her cheek, and then that's when Lanfear says, okay, that's enough of that.
Pulls it back. Coming
back. Yeah, don't worry. I know where she is. She's a prisoner of Ishamael's, and, you know, I can help you. Yeah. So we know that Ishamael wants Rand to go to Falm, and even though Lanfear gave him a choice of who he wants to see, the way he chose it is pointing him directly at Falm.
Yeah. Right. So well,
they're coming together.
Lanfear gave him a choice knowing who he would pick. Sure. She's not dumb. He is. But
he is.
Listen. Anyone.
That was a dangerous choice to make.
Yeah. Anyone that has been paying any attention to the show knows that he's not exactly the smartest person and trusts very easily, even if he says that he's not trusting her. Obviously, he did, but that's fine. I think this really sets up future seasons, but that's for the future. But obviously, because don't forget, none of these, he hasn't seen any of these people. He has no idea what is happening and what has happened and is hoping that they're all safe, which is why he's shocked that she's not in the White Tower, because he trusted that, you know, I left everybody so that they would be safe. And this whole idea of if I'm not there, then they're safe is kind of coming back to haunt him.
Thoroughly debunked. And there's a wonderful scene later on where they talk about that. But yeah, he knows that the world has not been kind to his friends.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But this way of manipulating that Lanfear does is way smarter than threatening, because he's going to do whatever he can to go
in fact, he says that he'll do anything. And she gives this little smirk. She is very pleased about that. Lanfear feels like she now has leverage over Rand. You know, she has reins to guide him. It made me wonder, though, if Rand is playing her a little bit. There was truly emotion there, but I think he's making his own play, and he's being vulnerable in a way that makes Lanfear soft for him.
I think there's definitely a small little bit of that. I don't think he's really thought as I don't think we can give him too much credit.
Well, it's the statement he made in the last episode where, you know, not everything between them was a lie. I think he's leaning into the real feelings that he has for her and she has for him, and is kind of using that to
make
sure that he's safe and she's with him in a way.
Yes. And using the knowledge that Luz Theron and her had that relationship and that affair. And that's why she turned to the shadow. There's definitely some presence of mind. I don't think it's too Dazed Amar going on, because he's not quite.
He's not a mastermind at a Shara board. He's just doing the best he can at this point. And forces that are far more powerful than him. But you know, he's giving it the old college try.
Exactly.
And then his next stop is back to Loghain.
Speaking of a game board, Loghain is playing stones.
He's playing stones. That was a nice little reference.
Little nod, which is go in our world. And Loghain's playing himself, I'm guessing. Or one of the
maybe one of his memories.
One of the voices in his heads. Right. Either way, he knows that Rand would be back.
And Rand is ready to bargain with him too. Mm-hmm. You know, Rand says, "I want to be taught," and Loghain says, "Why?" And Rand says, "Look, you thought you could make a difference. You thought you could change the world, and now I'm your only vehicle to do that. You can work with me, help me win, and that will, you know, give you some influence over the world, or you can just rot in this insane asylum."
Yeah.
So that convinces Loghain.
Yeah. And he pushes him and is like, "Look, you got to embrace the sword." Like, I love that. Loghain's pushing Rand, and Rand embraces. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "No, you need to grab it.
Don't surrender to it. You need to surrender.
And you
which
start,
is a nice nod to the books.
Yeah, and you start seeing the like black start to weave in
the corruption.
The corruption is coming in, and it gets bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden, Loghain it switches and he starts being scared and he's like, mm-hmm. "Oh no, this is not good. You gotta stop, slow down, wait and then
nobody takes that much power, stop it, you'll burn yourself out. And you know, it's obvious that Rand is much more powerful than even Loghain thought.
Mm-hmm.
And but then of course you know, Rand is just a beginner, so he stops channeling, he vomits, he says, "We don't have enough time. I can't learn this fast enough." And Loghain basically tells him that you have so much power that you can fight anyone. You don't mm-hmm. even need that much training.
Yeah.
You just have raw strength. Don't know how well that's going to serve him, but...
it's funny that was Moraine's advice as well.
Right?
Yeah.
At the Eye of the World. She's like, "Yeah, you're just going to do what you need to do."
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Just let the wheel, you know, the wheel's going to move around you. It'll be fine.
Right.
Everything's fine. It's all fine.
And we should mention that is probably the ethos that keeps Moraine from following Rand, sticking to him.
Yeah.
Saying, "Okay, I decided to trust this. I decided to let fate take us where we go. And even though this is terrifying, I'm going to let this happen."
Yeah.
And he starts to leave, and hears a voice.
Oh, I love this. And should we segue right into the Matt scenes? Because he hears his old friend who's gambling in the Foregate of Carrion, and it's wonderful. It's a reunion.
This
that
reunion
was better than I had thought.
Me too.
They give each other a hug. All is
Matt's
forgiven.
Wiping his face.
Matt
he's
wipes
crying.
Tears.
I know, right?
Yes.
Oh, my heart can't take it.
Gosh.
So beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Then
and
when he says
just the right things.
Yeah. Where's ahead. Then he? You know, where's everyone else? Because of course, Matt left. When everyone else like left Matt, so here's just like Rand was expecting everyone else to be where he left them, Matt's expecting Rand to be with everybody that he left.
You guys won, right? You came back.
Yeah, hooray! You're still alive.
And you're the dragon reborn, and it's all right.
Congratulations!
And then they have this lovely exchange, because both Rand and Matt have basically abandoned their friends, thinking that they were better off. And then Matt reassures Rand, "Hey, we weren't better off without you." And Rand basically says, "Back at you, bro."
Right.
And they're saying, "No, we need you. We need each other. This is good. We're old friends. We traveled together. We don't want to be alone, and we don't want to not have you around." And that was such a lovely bit of healing, which of course falls apart.
Yeah.
Right.
Am I jumping the gun here?
Only a little bit, but that's okay.
A little bit. Yeah. So Rand, Rand tells Matt that he does know that Ishamael is keeping Egwene a prisoner in Falm, and you don't have to come with me, but I'm going to go rescue her. And Matt's like, shut up, man. I gotta keep the dragon from becoming an arrogant prick.
Who else is going to keep you from becoming an arrogant prick? Dragon Reborn. Dragon. I don't know how he did that voice, but it was so funny. It was so Matt. So cute.
This is exactly what they all needed to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That, you know, we're together. We're coming together. I've got your back. No way I'm going to leave you. No way I'm going to abandon you. And he says, first, I got to go break a heart. and that's when he visits Min. And
who, by the way, previously had a dream visitation. Yes. From the one and only Ishi. Just kind of like, hey, you got him here. Good job. Congratulations. Now,
just got one more thing I need you to do before.
By the way, one more thing. Yeah, just one more little thing. It'll be fine. And then I will, you know, break your curse. Listen,
so
none of these people, the bad guys will never do what you think they're going to do. Mm-hmm. They'll never
make good on a bargain.
Never.
And Min's good with that. She says, that's how bargains work. I did this for you. You give me what you want. Unfortunately, not. Yeah. So Ishamael wants Min to make sure that Matt leaves with Rand. He's pointing all of them towards Falm. And Min objects. He says, I had this viewing. You know about this. Matt kills Rand with that ruby-hilted dagger. And, I don't want that to happen. He says, just make sure they leave together. That's the terms of the bargain. And so Matt confronts Min and quickly susses out that she was playing him all along, even before they met. Even when they first met in the cell, she was planted there. She was being used to get him and Rand together somehow, and she reveals the viewing she had about Matt with the dagger killing Rand, and says she tells him, if you love him, stay away from him.
Yeah.
So now Matt has to do the heartbreaking thing. After saying that, of course I need you, we're better off with you, he has to give Rand the slip again.
Ugh.
So heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. Yeah. And Min is absolutely gut-wrenched with this betrayal. You can see that she did not expect to like him, did not expect to want to be friends, and that's so difficult.
Matt is so angry with her, and he feels betrayed, and he throws it in her face. And, you know, his teeth are bared as he's talking with her, and she's just crushed. Mm-hmm. She's sitting on the floor drinking. She doesn't want any of this, but that's what happens when you make a deal with the Dark One.
Right? Exactly. And you see Rand pacing at the front gates, and Matt is hiding in a building, just watching.
Yeah.
And you could see he's trying to figure out if he's gonna. He looks so sad.
Mm-hmm.
He looks almost as sad as he did when he left Egwene crying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
a theme now, right? He's just not quite being there.
Yeah. The third time now that he has betrayed his friends.
Yeah.
And
which is what makes me really hopeful for like a Han Solo in Star Wars final thing where
don't give it away.
I'm just saying what I hope.
I'm hopeful. Yeah, let's get that redemption
get that. Yeah.
Yes. And Rand looks disappointed and just kind of nods and is like, "All right. alone it is. Mm. And Matt watches him walk away, and it's so sad, except then Rand meets somebody else.
Yeah. So let's talk about Lam.
Oh gosh. Okay, so this is the part that at this beginning we were talking about was lackluster. Lam is such a, I don't even know how to describe his character in this season other than bland. It has nothing to do with his long hair, his hair being down, anything like that. Like, he was warning. Like, I don't know what they're doing with him.
So this is the thing, and I know that some of the debates have revolved around, you know, defining masculinity and things like that, but let's take that out of the equation. Book Lan was the deadliest man alive. Mm-hmm. Strong to a fault. You know, the arrogance of a king with an army at his back, mm-hmm. I think is the quotation used. And he's just so ineffectual now. Outside of his relationship with Moraine and his sort of being her warder, he doesn't have an identity anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of painful to see for people who liked the character in the books. So right now what's happening is he's met up with Elaine and Alana and her two warders, and they are traveling presumably on their way to Tar Valon, and they make camp in apparently what used to be a temple to the Forsaken.
I mean, it still is a temple to the Forsaken, just nobody goes to it.
Yeah. Fair enough. And Lan is asking after the Ammerlin. He wants to know where the Ammerlin is. And then they make camp, and Alana seems to be having fun with one of her warders, as she is wont to do. And Lan's just kind of rolling around in his cloak outside. And finally, he decides to leave, and that's when Maxim stops him. Says, "Where are you going, friend?" And then Ivan shows up and says, "Yeah, where are you going, friendo?"
What's up, buddy?
Yeah. And Lan is, he wants to leave. The warders, like, draw a little bit of steel. And right before Lan can attack and prove himself the absolute better warrior than two of them combined, Alana wraps him up in flows of air, and they all accuse him of being a dark friend sworn to Lanfear because of the dark prophecy that they found in his saddlebags, which was something that Moraine had gotten from Bael Doman when she got the he was trying to sell her a fragment of the seal that had broken. So they took that to mean that he is a dark friend, he serves Lanfear, and they need to police him.
And that leaving to go and try and release her or get something.
Be evil, yes. Yeah,
and this scene honestly confused me. I was like, what on earth is going on? Because it never even occurred to me that they would accuse him of being a dark friend. I was like, why is this tension? Where is this coming from? Like, what's going on? And I was, like, completely baffled. I was like, what? They can't possibly think he's a dark friend. Like, that makes no sense. It was really funny.
Nobody trusts Lan. Nobody trusts that he can be strong enough to survive without Moraine, and nobody trusts that he even serves the light.
It wasn't until they started repeating the blood calls blood part of the poem that I was like, oh, that's why. Yeah. I wonder if for non-readers, if this moment, if you understood it sooner, maybe. I'd be really interested to know that. But Alana is just like, look, you tried to figure out where the Amirlin was, why.
Yeah, for assassination.
Like, are you trying to kill her? Like, you got to tell us the truth, Allied Mandragoran. Oh, gosh, I can't. Yeah. Or we will kill you where you stand.
Yeah.
And then his answer, though, we have found the dragon reborn. Mm. Not me, not Moraine, not I. Like, we have found the dragon reborn. And that's just like, oh, dang.
Yeah. But again, he's spilling the beans on this quest that he's been on for 20 years and knows he's got to keep private because you can't trust anybody. And, you know, he's just, well, okay, I guess I better let Alana be the boss.
Well, I think, though, I think it's the fact that they were going to kill a warder because they thought that he was a dark friend. I think that is an understanding that, okay, you're not Black Aja.
Okay, yeah, so he can trust them.
Fair enough.
I think that's where that came from. I don't necessarily think it was just, oh, you caught me. Okay, here's what's going on. So much as, look, you knew what you were like, you are not necessarily safe, but this is somebody else to bring into this circle to help us get to Swan.
Mm-hmm. And there is some urgency here, so
yeah,
absolutely.
And then we have this beautiful scene of Swan, you know, writing correspondence in the carriage, like you do in the dark. Can you? Okay, real quick, we need to take a little bit of a sidebar. But does she not get like nauseous or like how do you write in a carriage in the dark with candles and like a dip pen?
Well, you know how in the books Aes Sedai through a mental discipline can ignore heat and cold? In the adaptation, they can write in a moving carriage with candles.
Okay, excellent.
That's my theory. At
nope.
Least.
Totally valid. Someone's coming here. We got to get ready. And she preps. And I loved her crown of swords.
Oh my God. I loved it.
You know what it reminded
me
of in Thor Ragnarok, Hela?
Yeah.
When she has that big headdress that like turns into weapons and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's what it reminded
me
of.
So cool.
That was so impressive.
She's got these blades of air hovering around her in a halo.
I want it so bad.
Pierce whoever comes back. It was super cool.
So cool.
That's gonna be my cosplay this year.
Yes, do it. It's just Leyen. What's happened? What is it?
It's Moraine.
Okay. Drop everything. Let's go to Kyrian and hang out because
it's not suspicious for the Amarlin to all of a sudden come to Kyrian
right?
And visit a sister that's been exiled. Not suspicious at all.
Not at all. But also, okay, are we there? Are we going there? Are we going to drop to Moraine?
I think we're there. Like, she's writing letters now that Rand has left her. And we get an answer that the folks online have been debating. Has Moraine been shielded or has she been stilled?
Okay, to be fair... She is, to be fair, this is an unreliable narrator. She could still be stilled, or she could still just be shielded.
Shielded. Mm-hmm.
And thinks that she's stilled.
Yeah.
But she's writing a letter constantly.
Presumably to Siwan, right?
Right.
It does say dearest.
That's who we think she's writing?
Yeah, it does say dearest Siwan. It's
at the end of this section.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. But she's writing and it's failing. I like how they did the overlay of the text here to see how it's writing, and especially because whatever language they're writing in is not English.
Yeah.
And it's not
random script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so having it typed over. And Barthanas comes in and brings a sandwich to his auntie, which is so cute.
And you remember, auntie, I used to have the best butter, you said, and I thought it was because of the cow. I had a beautiful cow, but of course that cow's probably dead now, so it couldn't be that. But I still made you a sandwich, auntie, because I love you.
Wow, that was impressive. I hope you audition for the next season, Rashid.
That was beautiful.
I'm hoping. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so Barthenis has come to entreat Moiraine, and it's at his mother's urging. And when Moiraine is rude and dismisses him, he kind of meets his mom in the hallway and says, you know, you were right about her. So then
she comes in and has a hissy fit to her sister.
I mean, this is family drama is alive and well in the Damodred household.
Yup.
Moiraine, when her father was dying, Moiraine's father asked for her, even though Anavir was right there holding his hand. Daddy always loved you best, and you didn't even come. We sent a letter to the White Tower, and you just ignored it. You let your father die, even as he was asking for you.
What was so important?
We know that it's her quest for the Dragon Reborn, but here's the cost. Here's the cost of her single-minded mission, that people who would have been her supporters and people who loved her were pushed to the wayside, just as Lan was pushed to the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Lan, it's kind of funny that Lan like spills the beans and then Moiraine doesn't.
Yeah. You push him over and he just falls.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, though. Fine. She still can't trust, especially with whatever things might happen based off of our book knowledge.
Right.
But the, you know, sister is just like, okay, fine. Well, you need to get out of here because...
Get out of this house. Get out of the city. Yeah.
Yeah. And Moiraine instead is like, no, I'm the elder sister. I am the Damodred heir. Yeah. Suck
you
it.
Live here on my grace.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, this is harsh.
Yeah. She's got the arrogance that Lan lost, like double.
Yeah.
Totally. She stole his arrogance.
Yeah.
The last bit
rejoinder.
Is yeah.
Oh yeah, that's rough right there. We don't even know this history,
right?
Like it's not in the books or anything.
You are mother through and through. Oh, yeah.
You've taken none of the goodness of our father. Mm-hmm. You are mother through and through.
Dripping.
We don't know that history, but we know that cuts deep.
Yeah, we don't need to know it to know how bad that is. And Moiraine comes back just clearly emotionally drained, and that was really hard for her to deal with, and is now going to write, "Dearest Swan, something has happened to me. I have been stilled," is what I'm guessing that she says.
Mm-hmm. One presumes, and she gives it to the faithful Damodred butler, and says, "Put this in the hands of the Blue Aja." So she's being careful how her messages are being sent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing on that note is maybe they're writing in a cipher, because she would just put "I'm stilled" for anybody to see. I mean, it's got to be a cipher only her and Suan know.
Yeah, it's using the same letters and writing script that Yessica and Varen were looking at in the last episode. It might be a cipher, but not but
the writing is not a cipher. Letters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. The script isn't a cipher. Yeah, the script isn't a cipher. We can assume she's being discreet.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is she does go and apologize to Barthanas.
Yeah, she feels bad.
You know,
bad.
Before when she flinched back when he tried to, like, hold her hands, now she accepts a hug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
I hope that's not, like, a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I know there's speculation about one or both of those Damodreds being dark friends or doing something, but... I hope this is her trying to be a good person.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, she goes, "I think you'll make a wonderful king, kind and thoughtful. A king to make our house proud." Mm. Which is
Please
sweet.
Don't be irony.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. But then Surprise, the Merlin seat is there and demanding an audience with 14 eyes. Yeah. I did not get a chance to go through and see who we recognize in the...
I mean, we had Jessica there. We had Viren there.
Yeah, Viren I saw.
And Leandrin. Viren obviously Leandrin. There and makes a quip that, ha-ha, last time then Amarlin visited, we changed the ruler. We changed the king of Kaeri.
We put a new Sun King on the throne.
Right, right. This is interesting, and we'll talk about the books at the end of the episode, but it seems we have a scene like this that's just been moved a little bit.
Yeah, but okay, how did they all get there? Because the Merlin wasn't in the tower.
She was in Camelin.
That's true. Yeah. And we know that Leandrin and Varen and all of them were in. I wonder if this is just how we're getting everyone to foam.
Right. Right.
Just kind of gathering that all together.
They might all go there.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, pigeons were sent. Meet me here. I'm en route. Where are you at? Okay. There I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking in this world, the cities are a lot closer. Because when Rand and Moraine were fleeing Lanfear, they're on the road to Tar Valon from Kyrian. And it seemed like it was close.
Yeah, it was the same night.
They doubled back, though, but yeah.
Yeah, but she, the stable lady was in the view of Tar Valon.
Yeah,
that's true.
Drag him out. That would make sense. The horses are that good,
even though they're still
it's
within a day's ride. I mean, even a night's ride.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, it just to be within sight of Tar Valon.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know.
I don't think we can interrogate that too closely. Back in the Game of Thrones days, Varys could go from coast to coast instantaneously. It just
yeah, but we get to see another gorgeous swan outfit, and I cannot wait to see what happens, because obviously we did not, I don't know about you, but I was not expecting Moraine and Swan to see each other again. I mean, obviously we saw in the trailer a little bit of something, but it looked like it was from the past.
Flashback or something.
Yeah. So it might still be a flashback. I'm not sure, but either way, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't see it this episode.
I know, nope. Right? So disappointing.
That's it. That's all we saw with them.
Now, Leandrin made an appearance here, but we actually, earlier in the episode, there is a scene dedicated to Leandrin. Yep. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, let's. Lanfear also shows up. Mm-hmm. But first, Leandrin is like singing to her son, being emotional, and Celine comes in. Now I'm saying it's Celine, not Lanfear, because of the eye makeup. I think that's
the long hair there, which so I just prefer, by the way, but okay, that's just
you know what, nobody cares. If you like longer hair, you can grow your hair out longer. That's totally fine.
Just saying.
Yeah, so Leandrin like hears somebody behind her and whips around and shoots a fireball that, of course, Celine just dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
first one's free.
Yeah. That was so funny. And Lanfear is just like, look, I've seen your dreams. You're weird. I don't know what you're thinking.
You have interesting fixations.
Yes.
I love, which is obviously Nynaeve.
Yeah. And you hate men. Why do you work for Ishi? With one exception, at least, and is like carefully petting the son's head, kind of in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And is just like, you know, she knows why Leandrin swore the oaths. She knows.
Yeah.
Like, and is going to manipulate Leandrin however she can, obviously. Mm-hmm. Because
so
she...
you swore the oaths to the dark, not to Ishamael. Mm-hmm. So you're going to serve the dark.
By
and
serving
by
me.
The way, the leverage... Yeah, the leverage that Ishamael had over you to help your son here, well, he hasn't made good on that, has he? And you know what? I'm going to remove that leverage.
Yeah,
and
because it
kills
we,
him.
Here we learn that she swore her oaths to keep him alive.
That's really interesting.
Which
I mean, that's so human.
So interesting. So human. And it, I mean, it means, so we know. Also, we learn in this that she was beaten and starved and married before she bled. And I'm guessing that's that marriage is where the son came from.
Mm-hmm. And the hatred
means,
of men, I'm sure.
Obviously. And so she was black after she had her child. But that had to have been, so she became Aes Sedai after she was married. Because there's no way that you could be forced to marry.
Yeah.
As an Aes Sedai, or even a, you know,
well, she could have been very young.
Right.
I mean, if you
well,
think about
what,
women sold into marriage, they can be very, very young.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying
is pre-puberty.
They're not Aes Sedai, which means that she wasn't sent to the tower until after she had had a child.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I'm
yes,
guessing.
Yes.
Yeah. And so this kind of fits the timeline idea of, you know, this hatred of men and why she still loves, you know, her son, even though she's going, you know, going around and hating men. I know there was a theory that he must have been a channeler and that's why she was keeping him. But honestly, I think it's just the only true love that she's ever had.
Yeah.
Because obviously her parents
didn't
love her.
That's the one thing that is mine.
Yeah.
It belongs to me. I take that at face value.
Yeah. But she can't even watch him die. Like, that is so, so sad. Like, the emotional distraught. And
Leandrin is watching her do it as she takes the breath out of his lungs.
Oh, she's not watching.
She's powerless to do anything.
She would
well,
not.
Her facial expression. Yeah, her facial expression. She knows what's happening.
She knows it's happening, but can't watch. And it's just so much so hard. Maureen, I have to ask,
yes,
do you still think that this is a long con?
Maybe. Well,
wow.
No, my theory was that she was forced to have this baby for the shadow. And well, forced to have the baby was kind of right.
I mean, not necessarily forced to have the baby, but forced to marry and have sex. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The other stuff, maybe not. I'm still holding out hope.
No, that's a good. It's a good.
I think this is headcanon right now.
I like it.
You
lean
can
into
make
it
work, but we're never going to see it on screen.
No. It'll just be in your brain forever.
Yeah, that's okay. No, but I did like this reveal. I think it made a lot of her motivation not so weird. Because it's like, her motivation was just like so wonky. So having a son and wanting to, I mean, joining the dark to save him. And she could have even joined the dark when he was a baby. Like, what if he was sickly as a child?
Yeah.
And so she's, you know, 15-year-old girl with this little baby. Like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. Reach out to the dark. So I definitely think that this made her more bearable, in my opinion.
Well, especially too, the sickness, whatever, I don't remember what it was. But Nynaeve recognized it and recognized that it was in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's entirely possible that it's a genetic condition that he had. And so as a 15-year-old girl is like, I will do whatever it takes.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And we know that the aging, like, obviously 20-year-olds can go to the tower since that's when they're... So it works out. The timeline
Yeah. Elaine's, I mean, even just looking at Elaine, you know, she's about that age.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. Well, and then she pops over to be sassy to Swan. So, you know, she's fine.
Yeah, but why would she join Lanfear? Like, when Lanfear's like, oh, you sold your soul to keep him alive. Well, I'm just going to kill him for you.
Because, no, because here's the thing is that that wasn't, Ishii betrayed her trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she's alive, but she, yes, he's alive, but he's not living. He's in pain constantly. Mm-hmm. After a certain amount of time, that pain no longer is worth it. Mm-hmm. But you can't sit and kill your own child that you have done all of this for. And so, just like she said,
Lanfear was doing this, as a, almost like a favor, a gift that only a woman can grant another.
Yeah.
I think there's another aspect here, which, you know, happens in the books a little bit, is that the Forsaken will snap you up and they will they will scoop you up and they'll say, okay, you're serving me now.
Mm-hmm.
What? Yep. Are you objecting for some reason? I don't need to hear that. You're serving me now.
Mm-hmm.
And you just
and
do
I want you. You have. Mm-hmm. I have a better idea of what you're gonna do, so you need to come and work for me because obviously you're being wasted. Nobody here knows what they're talking about, so you need to.
And who are you to countermand any of these things? I mean, it may not be fair, it may not be coherent or consistent. But when somebody of that power comes and says, "Okay, you're working for me now," you say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, exactly, and then she trots off to go play with Swan and the rest of the Aes Sedai. For some reason, we will find out maybe next week.
I hope
or
so.
Not. I hope
better
so.
Be.
Yeah. I feel like it. That feels like a really good penultimate episode before what we think will happen at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's check back at the Shan Shan court where.
Speaking
where
of Falm.
Heartbreaking stuff going on.
Oh my goodness.
Our pal Loyal, the Ogier.
And Pretty Boy Inktar.
And Inktar with the guyliner. They're waiting on High Lady Suroth and a bunch of other sort of giggling and laughing Shan Shan nobles. And they are servants. No, they're worse than servants because
their
Suroth
property.
Calls. Yeah. Suroth calls Loyal an it.
Yes.
You know, I should gift it to Turok.
Yeah.
But first, she has him perform like a dancing monkey. She says, "I want you to sing." And Loyal kind of says, "Okay, well, tree singing is... Nah, come on, sing." And there's this like little bonsai tree in the middle of their little party there. And he begins to sing in this beautiful bass rumble, and the tree begins to grow. And it's interesting watching the Shan Shan nobles because they're starting to look at it with some awe. Like, this is something that is beautiful and magical and wondrous. But then Suroth kind of breaks that spell.
Yeah,
she sees
that spell and is like, uh-uh. I was supposed to be making fun of him. Yeah. I was trying
you
to.
You were a parlor trick. You are not. Yeah. You're
yeah.
Not more than
real
that.
Emotions aren't important. And it's like, oh, yay. I want to give him as a gift to Turok. How shall I gift it? Like, just, you know.
Yeah.
Owning the group, which, you know, it makes
terrible
sense.
Terrible debasement of something wonderful.
And
again. Trees are a theme here. We'll see with Egwene again.
Yeah, but she's trying to get. She's like the biggest bully in the schoolyard. She has been, you know, completely denounced and ruined, and has to find entertainment by herself because she can't do it with the rest of the blood. So she has to do with her own people.
Yeah,
she's got to grow her fingernails back.
Before she's you know, acceptable. I forget the word that they used.
Presentable.
Presentable, yes. Thank you. Saving the day again, Maureen. they leave instead. Loial and Inktar leave, and Inktar has a tray, which everyone knows anytime you've seen any sort of spy movie or escape from anything.
Nobody questions the delivery guy.
No one questions a servant that is carrying a tray of food, because it's got to go somewhere, obviously. And so they're learning. Loial is learning what Inktar has discovered, and that the horn is just in a treasure trove somewhere. It's not even guarded. But Loial also asks about Egwene, and is like, dude, there's so many people guarding this area. There's no way. They call it the kennels.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then Loial says, there is steel underneath that sweet exterior. If anyone can survive that place, it's her. And I just got so sad.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
But before we talk about her, let's visit in with Nynaeve and Elaine, who are laying low in Raima Sadeh's house with her warder. Ugh. And they're hiding out from the Shanshan, and they are, of course, in typical book fashion, they are bickering. Nynaeve is calling Elaine princess. That's her insult for Elaine. Finally the warder comes in and says, I can hear you from all the way downstairs.
And Raima's like, oh, he just likes lecturing. I love their relationship. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
And
there was a look, which we'll get to, but yes, there's a look that passes between them that's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a great couple.
And Raima recognizes that Nynaeve is wearing a wisdom belt, which I thought was really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, this I loved this, and we can move ahead a little bit on this. But Raima is Yelawaja, so she's a healer. This is Nynaeve's area of interest. She's a wisdom. They connect right off based on, well, you know that these berries, I forgot which berries were they, but
she's Elden berries. Elden berries.
I think so. Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. And so Raima recognizes that Nynaeve is a wisdom, says, you know what these do. This is what this is for. And then later on, when they're trying to channel, she basically says, you know, it's just like when you have a patient. You don't question it or try to figure out. You just heal them. You're just there for them.
Yeah. And this
Which is the same advice.
And Maureen, that connects with Nynaeve.
I remember Maureen said that to Rand, and Loghain said that to Rand, and so now somebody's saying it to Nynaeve, which is just kind of funny.
Yeah.
You're just going to do it.
And she's saying that to Nynaeve when they have a dumb. They have this collar and bracelet that are what make the Damane, and they're going to try.
Well, that gets brought out after Raima realizes that she wants to. At first, she learns from Nynaeve and Elaine that, yeah, Leandrin is a dark friend. Mm-hmm. She has broken all three oaths, Elaine says. And that means that the Black Ajah is real and the tower is in terrible danger.
Mm-hmm. All the sisters.
The first thing Raima wants is, hey, I know a ship captain. Sorry. he'll take you to Tarvalon, and you've got to take this news directly to the Ammerlin.
And they're like,
Elaine says, nope. Mm-hmm. Our first mission, we're gonna save our friend. We're gonna save Egwene. And so Raima relents and says, okay, I've got this Adam here. This is what's keeping her prisoner. We need to figure it out.
Yep.
And luckily, Elaine, who's a tinkerer, knows and can analyze some things. She identifies it as a Tarangriel.
Yeah, but she that she's not the one that notices, that no. talks about what its happens purpose. With it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's. And it's a scary statement that Nynaeve makes when she finally is able to channel, and she channels a little too much.
Yup.
She says that, oh, yeah, this needs to be healed. This thing needs to be healed, and the only way it can be healed is to be put around a woman's neck.
Ugh.
So bizarre. And,
what an evil thing.
Yeah.
For this thing to be whole, it needs to enslave someone.
Yeah.
Making it the most evil of artifacts.
Yeah, definitely.
This is bad because the jolt of power that shoots from Nynaeve is enough to acknowledge that there is a channeler here.
Yeah, so they're all around Falm. Suldam and Damani are patrolling, looking for women who can channel. And this is enough to attract the attention. So first Rima says, okay, I have these rings. The reason I got this, Adam, is because three of my sisters fell for me to get it. And there is it looks like a gray, a green, and a blue Aja ring. The blue and the gray died.
Yep.
The green and the gray died.
The green and the gray, yeah.
They were killed. And the blue one was taken, and it was a friend of Rima's, and she's distraught over it, of course. But, you know, after they realize that the Seanchan are after them, Rima takes off her own yellow ring. Ugh. And entrusts it to Nynaeve and calls her sister.
Yeah.
Which is such a quietly powerful moment.
And can I trust you to give my ring to the flame?
Yeah.
To make sure that it's returned.
I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
And she take this. And if you want to save your friend, you will not lift a finger because they are after a channeler. I will give them.
A channeler. And Rima's this moment, this last chunk of scenes is done so incredibly, layered with Egwene scenes and so emotional. And so
it's interleaved in a wonderful way. Yeah.
Absolutely beautifully done. It's so brutal. And yet there's these moments that are so glorious. The wink that Rima gives to her warder before the soldiers come.
They go out like champs. They absolutely go out to the door. She winks at him. He draws his sword. And the warder goes after the soldiers. And God, Rima is brutal with the one power now.
Oh my God.
For anyone who's wondering about three oaths violations, the one power can be used as a weapon in defense of an Aes Sedai's life or her warder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely what's happening right now. And, you know, you can see Rima like breaking every bone in the Suldam's body, folding her in half, crumpling her.
Yeah.
And then the
Damani feeling it double.
The Damani feels it. Right. Yeah. We'll talk about the rules of the Adam. But
But she doesn't do that until she tries to get her warder to kill her first so that she's not captured.
Yes.
And right before he gets killed, and that is when she just loses her shit. And she's just like, no, I got this. And it's only at that last heartbreaking moment that she is screaming when she gets collared. And I just, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And with the collaring, you know, we've been talking about this kind of out of order of the episode. We've been seeing Egwene's scenes as she is broken toward the Adam So we know just how bad this thing is that's about to happen to Rhyme. Yep. Because we're seeing it unfold across the episode. Mm-hmm. And it's harrowing. This is this is disgusting brutality and, that the Seanchan inflict.
And speaking of which, let's head on over there, shall we?
Yeah, hold on. Why do you think Rhyma didn't try to kill herself?
Because she probably couldn't.
Yeah, you don't think you could create a dagger out of air and stab your heart?
I think that would be using a weapon not to protect yourself.
You think so? So that would be a violation of the three oaths.
Yeah, I don't
think she could have drawn enough power to burn herself out, but she's in the heat of combat.
Also, who knows what she wanted to make sure that Elaine and Nynaeve weren't injured.
That's true.
And so she didn't become
a liability. So,
yeah. Yep. And so, that's the plan. Unfortunately, it didn't work very well, obviously.
So let's go to maybe the... For me, it was the most difficult sequence
of this
episode. I scenes of people being broken, systematically broken, are very tough for me to deal with. And this was all of that.
With a smile on her face, too.
Well, completely dehumanizing, right? Yes. So we have this. So let's explain the dynamics for people who don't read the books. The Seanchan have this system where there are Suldam, which are women who basically wear a bracelet that is connected through the One Power to the collar. And this bracelet and collar system is called an Adam, or as they call it, the Adam. I'll pronounce it the way I've heard it before, but Adam. This system allows the Suldam to control the Damani, who is the collared one. The Damani is the one who can channel. And this device basically creates a system of punishments and control such that the Suldam, who's wearing that bracelet, can control and direct the Damani to use the power however the Suldam deems fit.
And with an ability to be protected from that power being used on them. Displayed beautifully, flawlessly.
So there are four lessons that Egwene learns through this sequence in a very brutal fashion. So lesson one is that a Suldam's pain is felt twice over by the Damani, even unto death. So, the Damani needs to make sure that the Suldam is protected, even from herself. Like, if she tries to punch the Suldam or attack the Suldam isn't going to feel anything, but it's going to rebound with twice the intensity on the Damani. This is one level of control. Lesson two is that a Damani cannot remove the Adam or even touch it, to try to open it. Otherwise, she'll be met with excruciating pain. Lesson three is a Damani cannot touch the Adam's bracelet. So sometimes the Suldam will take off the bracelet and just hang it on the wall. If a Damani tries to grab that bracelet, she gets excruciating pain. And then lesson four is, and this is where the control really happens over the course of the episode, if a Damani imagines that an object can be used as a weapon, especially against a Suldam, she cannot touch it without being tortured, without the collar just, delivering a lot of pain.
Completely recoiling. The noise that they have when, which is kind of like the collar powering up. Almost like that vibration is perfect. Once again, they are absolutely nailing the Foley work and the sound effects in this, because you know exactly when that comes in the future, you know what it means. You know just what it's causing, and it's it's horrifying. And then you layer on that to the American accent. It's just horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. I just, oh my gosh. It's so.
Rena opens by saying she wants to cultivate a friendship with Egwene because, you know, that's how they work best. So tell me your name. And Egwene refuses and says, I'm going to have to hurt you, I'm afraid, if you don't, you know, obey my commands. So what's your name? And then that's another thing that the bracelet can do, is it can deliver pain to as the Suldam wishes. And finally, Gwyn has to relent and give her a name. It's a, oh, what a nice name. It's kind of a nice name. Maybe I'll let you keep it. And so, you know, we talked about back when we were talking about Lanfear and Rand, and Lanfear kind of making this accommodation where she's got a partnership with Rand, even though we know that she wants to be in total control. I think that's mirrored in a more brutal, raw way between this. This is what the Suldam-Damani relationship is a master and dog relationship. You know, they call the prison where they're kept kennels. These are not humans. Rena tells Egwene, oh, you shouldn't think of yourself as a woman. You're a Damane. That's subhuman. It's terrifying.
It's absolutely horrifying. This whole ownership and the pride that she, that Rena is taking on getting to do this training, this teaching, this moment of, sweetie, hi, like, let me give you this, you know, the carrot first. I don't want to have to use the stick, but I will if I need to. That
there
power.
Are sticks all around you, but
all
you know,
around
we're gonna,
you
we're just work with me here. And the most insidious and evil thing is it actually has echoes to Orwell's 1984, is where that last rule where a Dameni cannot touch an object that she thinks of as a weapon. There is a pitcher of water in a cup. That's the only thing in the cell where Egwene is being kept. And Egwene imagines, as Rena knew she would, she imagines taking that pitcher and smashing her over the head and beating the hell out of Rena. And so when Rena comes, she tries to do that, and is the Adam immediately starts torturing her. And that's when Rena tells her, yeah, you can't do that. You can't touch this pitcher if you're thinking of it as a weapon. And so every time she visits, Rena says, okay, fill up my cup with some water. And it, of course, tortures Egwene every time she tries to reach the pitcher because she's thinking of it as a weapon. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, you will not be able to touch this until you just completely abandon the idea that you are going to hurt me in any way. You are my dog. You will obey me. You will not even think of harming me, or you will suffer. So every time, fill my cup, fill my cup, fill my cup. And it's like in 1984 when O'Brien is torturing Winston Smith, and he's saying, how many fingers am I holding up? And Winston keeps saying, you're holding up three fingers. No, how many fingers? And, you know, he's getting tortured. And I don't know, however many fingers you want. That's when Winston is broken.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of paradigm with Egwene. When she is finally tortured so far that she has abandoned all thought of resistance is when she can take the pitcher, fill Rena's cup, and Rena dumps it on the ground and says, good girl.
Lick.
She is broken. But before that, we should talk about the lesson in channeling.
The lesson. Oh, my God.
There's a tree outside of Egwene's window that gives her comfort when she looks at it.
And of course, Rinna knows. Rinna knows that tree gives her comfort because through the Adam, she can, you know, feel the emotions. You can feel your Damane, what they're feeling, what they're thinking. Not obviously exactly what they're thinking, but like that energy, the vibes, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And so she knows that this tree, this beautiful tree that's growing with flowers, the first night that Egwene is there, she crawls up and looks out the window and sees this tree, and it brings her hope. And so Rinna brings Egwene over and is like, all right, see, feels better now that we are complete, when she puts the wristband on. And it's like, look at the tree, Egwene. I know it gives you comfort. Reach out for it. Search for its roots. And then starts walking through, following the roots up, finding the sap. Let's heat up the sap. Give it power. Give it emotion. Like, give it the heat. And then it burns the tree down. And she, Egwene, can't control it. She cannot make a difference and do anything other than what Rinna wants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rinna's ecstatic. You can see it. You know, I think the episode's title, Eyes Without Pity, are predominantly about Rinna and her, you know, heavily coal-lined eyes, because it's just the way she looks at Egwene and the way she just says kind things, but tortures and beats the hell out of
her. Yeah, because there's no pity here, because this is expected. This is absolutely expected.
This is a process. This is the process.
Yeah.
This is what they do. They've got it down to a science.
Mm-hmm. There's one point that she says, like, some of the most powerful Damane are the hardest to be trained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The hardest to break.
And so she's like expecting this. This is all that she's excited, I guess, to
and
have
this is
this
such
win.
An irony with all of Egwene's little jealousy of Nynaeve, you know. Chandler in 1,000 years. Hasn't the White Tower told you how much potential you have?
How special you are.
Yeah, how special you are. And the tree thing was especially brutal, and I loved the, you know, I loved, hated the juxtaposition with Loyal's tree singing.
Where
he made it grow and blossom, and it was a thing of wonder. And what the Shan Chen do is they almost take that, you know, be one with the tree sort of thing, and burn it the fuck down.
Absolutely.
Can I say the fuck down on this podcast?
Well, you know what? But it's fine. Jason.
Burn it down.
It's
raw and hurtful and terrifying, and it just makes you feel gross. But God, is this effective stuff?
Yeah, this is
effective television.
And Egwene just keeps looking worse and worse. Mm-hmm. There's
blood,
her
eyes
are bleeding right there. She's got blood vessels burst in her eyes.
Well, and I will say, for the continuity fans, or the lack of continuity, I don't know. In one of the beginning things, when Egwene has the huge red scratch wound on her cheek, it switches cheeks a couple times.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. So look out for that in that little montage where there's a couple bits and it looks like she's walking back and forth and like wandering. It's on the right side a couple times, even though we know it's on the left. So keep your eyes open for that. this whole thing is just built up to the moment where she finally gives in, and then she drinks water, because of course if you can't touch the jug, you cannot use it to bathe, to drink, to do any of that.
Yeah. So the thirst is there. She's being broken on all levels. And mm-hmm. we should mention that somewhere midway, she hears another woman's voice in the cell adjacent, basically
repeating.
Just reciting the rules of a Damani. And, you know, she's trying to say, hey, my name is Egwene. I'm a, you know.
Hi, friend.
You're okay. We're you know, this isn't, we're not Damani. We aren't subhuman. But the voice just keeps repeating it. And now at the very end, after Egwene is broken, the woman decides to speak with her and says, you lasted longer than I did, and I was a sitter for the Blue Aja. When we see who she is, it's Megan, who in season one, you know, was talking to Moraine about, there's some problems going on. There's some ships and some bad people coming ashore. So she was apparently one of the people sent to deal with the Shanshan and was Rima's friend, and she has also been broken.
Mm-hmm.
A full Aes Sedai.
Yeah, and the head of the Blue Aja.
Who had a lot of status. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was a sitter for the Blue Aja, at least.
No, Moraine defers to her as the head in season one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a woman of very high status,
very high
power,
mm-hmm.
who is who's become a dog.
Yep.
Who's adopted her position as
worse than property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely heartbreaking. And what a frickin' way to leave the episode. Holy cow.
Like I said at the beginning, I think a lot of people, a lot of fans, a lot of viewers are going to have trouble with this episode.
I think so too, yeah.
There's a lot of horrible things happening and no catharsis yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have to wait a week now.
Yeah.
I know, right?
to get any catharsis out of that. And
it's gonna be a rough one.
Point.
Yeah. But you know, it's coming up from here, and we book readers will kind of know what's coming up. But of course, if you have not read the books and you would like to not be spoiled or be a part of this conversation, we're going to enter the spoiler horn here, because after this we'll be discussing the books. So feel free to skip this chapter and head to the end, and we will talk to you soon. Okay. So first off, you made a really good point, Rajiv, about Eyes Without Pity. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So in the books, this was actually in the first book, a chapter called Eyes Without Pity, and it was Shanshan adjacent, but not quite Shanshan. So, you know, Egwene and Perrin and Elias are running from the White Cloaks and from ravens that are murderous, and they shelter in next to this shattered statue of Artur Hawkwing, and there's this big eye, a stone eye. And Perrin notes that it's sort of this stern eye without pity. There's a very Shelley's Ozymandias poem sort of captured in that. And it also dealt with the ravens who were chasing them, you know, black eyes without pity.
Yeah.
Here I think, you know, Hawkwing is associated with the Shanshan. He was the ancestor, or I should say the Shanshan were descendants of Artur Hawkwing in the book. And ravens, of course, are their symbol. But the eyes without pity here are Rena's.
Definitely.
She is a ruthless, horrible person who thinks she is doing the right thing.
Yeah, the colonizing aspect of this is difficult for anyone that maybe hasn't come to terms with that. Maybe, how do I say this nicely? Maybe Americans aren't, you know, God-given right, you know, manifest destiny ownership mm-hmm. of things, coming in and telling people what they should do. But you look at this and you have this society that thinks that they know better, that thinks that they own, you know, the elite, that are the powerful, that know how to manage this, that are coming in and just being like, look, y'all don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You need to keep it together, because this is like, what is even happening? I don't even know. So you need to stop, because you suck.
There's a lot of online discourse about the Shanshan, and, you know, whether, you know, they can be categorized as evil, you know, is morality relative to the culture, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to wade into that, but I do want to drop a book recommendation. And this is relevant to the Wheel of Time. There is a series called The Burning, and it's written by author Evan Winter. And Evan Winter is actually a Wheel of Time fan. And what he wrote, the first book of this series is called The Rage of Dragons. Second is The Fires of Vengeance. And there are some very familiar plot elements for Wheel of Time readers. But he takes on the idea of a caste system and of power that belongs to the elite, and the kind of injustice and the exercise of power by the powerful against the powerless, and the rebellion against that, and what it means to resist that. Those are themes that Winter takes on, you know, just head on, and he does it very, very well. And it's a rollicking good read. You know, the second book of the series is out so far. I think the third is coming soon. But it's any Wheel of Time fan who wants a little more of this sort of theme addressed and talked about, and still wants a great epic fantasy with, you know, African Bronze Age trappings, check out The Burning by Evan Winter.
I'm excited.
Good stuff. Totally good stuff.
I am also excited to kind of see what Lanfear's little commentary about Moraine means. Because of course Lanfear is like, if I see Moraine again, I'll kill her. Mm-hmm. And I think that this means that we will get this death sooner than expected, and definitely not through the arches. We've talked about this before. We don't necessarily know for sure how many seasons Rosamund Pike is going to be a part of. It kind of seems like it's being set up to possibly be two seasons. It would be easy enough to kind of manipulate and manage this to happen to where it's like, this is the end of her. Lanfear and Moraine get in a fight, or possibly in season three. We'll see what happens. But that also, you know, pairs with the idea of Moraine being stilled. I think that we will still get Swan and Leanne being stilled, but in the future, and then that's when Nynaeve will heal. And I don't think Moraine's going to come back. She might show up at the very, you know, end, just be like, "Ha ha, Rosamund Pike is back," but probably not.
Take a bow. So we're talking about what happens in the Fires of Heaven.
Yes.
In the books. Moraine knows Lanfear is out there, knows she's after Rand, and knows that having her influence on Rand is a bad thing. And so Moraine decides to sacrifice herself, at least as far as she knows, to take Lanfear off the board. And, you know, she ends up facing Lanfear. She lays a trap for Lanfear, essentially. Yep. Baits it with an Angreal, and then They both, Moraine rushes her. They both fall into a portal to another dimension, and the portal burns down, and they both aren't seen for several books. So, you know, the idea is that she's written a letter. In the books, it's to
Tom.
In the books, it's to Rand, actually.
Oh.
She's got another one to Tom. Yeah, there's a few letters she writes. But, you know, we don't see the end of the letter she's writing to Siouan now.
Mm.
And this may be a setup for when she dies, taking out Lanfear, then Swan will get the letter, or somebody will get the letter that she wrote saying, hey, I did it for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. Well, it's, especially because even though Swan is there, that is not the servant necessarily wasn't given those instructions. It was said to give it to a blue Aes Sedai, so it might not be sent to who it needs to be sent to.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, yet, so it might come later. Yeah.
Destination.
Yeah.
Well, and the parallel with that is that she writes it, my dearest Siouan, and in the book, it's my dearest Tom, is the one that gets mad on the path to the Tower of Genji.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Which will probably not happen, I'm guessing.
I really hope not.
It's strange that they would use that same wording, though.
Like, I think that almost makes it more powerful to be like, okay, look, book readers, hey, you know that this is what it was going to be. We're just letting you know. We're gonna set this up. That hey,
we know about this. But
yeah,
we're not going to go into this other dimension with fairy folk and all of
I mean, we stuff. Might still get the other dimension, just not for Moraine.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But who knows? I mean, honestly,
who knows?
Yeah, yeah. There's so many. I don't know. And again, you know, I swear
That's
we say
fun.
This every single time. Uh-huh. It's so much fun.
Yes.
It's so
exciting.
Much fun.
All right. So book readers, you know, if you've read book two, that ... I'm being slow, so you can shut off if
haven't finished
book two.
Listen,
we sounded the alarm.
Yeah.
Ingtar's a dark friend
yes.
in the books. He's a prisoner of the Seanchan right now, and he's looking for the horn right now. Maureen, Kathy, what do you think? Is Ingtar a dark friend in the show?
Oh, absolutely.
So. Yeah.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. I mean, they
that
set up...
That much guyliner is...
Yeah, okay. No, not at all. Anyone is hot with guyliner. I think it comes down to the fact that they put that foreshadowing, that beautiful piece of conversation when they're burying the wolf the thing, the rest of the dark friends. I think they would not have put that foreshadowing there if it was not actual foreshadowing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
He's still intent on the horn, which is he thinks is his salvation.
Yep. Because he thinks he can save himself and his, for whatever reason, that he became a dark friend, too. Yeah. We don't know what his reasoning was.
In the books, at least, we know that Ingtar thought that he lives on the borderlands, he fights the shadow every day, and he came to the conclusion that they could not possibly win. So they needed some sort of accord. That's why he became a dark friend, is that he basically wanted to save humanity.
Yeah.
He says, well, better to have an alliance and live than to be crushed under the forces of the shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's why he became a dark friend in the books. And he's sort of redeemed in the book as well. By the end of The Great Hunt, he's the one who says, look, I made some mistakes, but you know, no man is so far in the shadow that he cannot find the light again.
Mm-hmm.
And he holds a pass against, you know, the enemies and allows our heroes to escape. Maybe that happens again. We'll
yes.
see.
Yeah, I hope so.
And
it was a good plot.
Yeah, I liked it. And I think that would really lay up this idea of, you know, redeeming qualities that is so strong in mm-hmm.
totally in totally. The story. And maybe it might set up the path for Leandrin to be redeemed.
Maybe.
No, Mara,
I don't want that. No.
She is a great villain.
Yeah. She is, yes.
But damn, she is tortured. Uh-huh. And she keeps getting tortured.
Yeah.
This latest with Lanfairy is, the thing she had to live for is mm-hmm. gone now.
Yep.
And, you know, her advice to Nynaeve is then find the next thing that you live for that, mm-hmm. that is yours.
Yes.
You know, I think she's hitched her wagon to Nynaeve now, and I wouldn't put it past him to say Nynaeve is Leandrin's path to redemption.
Mm,
but, possible. You know, well, we'll see.
Maybe.
We'll
see. Maybe.
Yeah, and these characters definitely are a lot more gray area than black and white as they are in the books.
Yes, absolutely. Which I freaking love yes. so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
While we're on this talk of dark friends, Alvir and Barthanes. Do we think that they are dark friends?
I don't know. Maybe. Because we keep seeing these people that are gorgeous, but monsters. And yeah. So, I mean, he just kind of fits that. Especially when everybody's insisting, oh, he's just like father. He's sweet and he's kind and he's blah, 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 blah. So, maybe.
Yeah. I think I can see it being... So I don't think Alvair is, mm-hmm. but I definitely think Barthanes is. And I think mm-hmm. that this is kind of, again, this conversation of, you know, who you can still be kind and be a dark friend. You know, mm-hmm. there's so many layers and levels here, and mm-hmm. I think it would make sense. And that's kind of why he's going to marry the queen to kind mm-hmm. of take over take and win that.
So I can see it happening. I don't know necessarily how it would further the plot one way or the other, but you know, this plot has taken so many twists and turns that I haven't foreseen that. You know, I'm willing to say I can be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Lanfair killing Leandrin's son.
Mm-hmm.
Did not see that coming.
No, right, yeah.
Not at all.
Did not see that at all.
So you know, it's mm-hmm. it's all open for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, in the books, Carrion, after Tom kills King Galdrian, there's fighting for the Sun Throne, and then the Aiel come and sack it. And then it's like, it's just in turmoil. So I think it needs to get to that state. So there has to be something that happens there to get it in this state of turmoil. And it could be Barthanes turns out to be a dark friend, or other weird things going on if he marries
or something
Queen Galdrian.
Horrible happens at a wedding, at the wedding.
Right? Yeah, get our own little red wedding going on.
Right.
I mean, that's possibly where Lanfear and Moiraine have their confrontation mm-hmm. is somewhere there. And then, you know, it just lays waste to Carrion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that all may be true. The action is pointed towards Falm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this might be a season 3.
Oh, definitely.
Plot
or 4.
Point. I mean, or yeah, even sure. 4. Especially if we, as we add in Caemlyn and as we mm-hmm. add in the dragon, you know, taking ownership of different countries,
mm-hmm.
it's an easy way to kind of transfer that. I mean, who knows? Barthanes could also be a Forsaken, you know? Maybe it's another Demondred.
That's Samael. It's Samael. No. One thing I wanted to bring up. There was a little line dropped when Raima was talking about why she was sent to investigate the Shanshan. Rumors of strange beasts. Mm-hmm. Now, there's mm-hmm. been a lot of speculation online whether we'll see the Shanshan exotics, the animals, the Grom, the Quorm, the other things I can't pronounce, the crazy three-eyed animals, the six-legged animals.
Shredit.
Yes, yes. So basically, dragons and elephants and
big lizards
giant
and lizard
frogs.
Cats.
Yes. So, you know, I think there might be a special effects budget for this because they did drop rumors of strange beasts.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Or they might just have elephants, and that'll be cool too.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, totally awesome. Or like elephants with a added thing to it or something. I don't know.
Two trunks.
Yes. Either way, I love the idea of just kind of, I think we'll have bits of it. I think they'll come out during the fight. Yeah. Obviously, around town, they're not going to be.
There's going to be a final battle at the end of the season.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. Ishamael and Rand in the skies above Falm, the last battle, the Horn of Valyr, all of that is coming together.
Yeah,
so.
Just two more episodes. That's crazy to think that we're almost all done.
If Matt comes in and that's his Han Solo moment where he says,
Oh,
we're losing. We could use an army.
I got this. I just happened to find this. Thing.
Who says it can't be blown before the last battle? Let me do that. And he just does something crazy and saves the day in the most spectacular fashion. Mm-hmm. I would feel so very good about that because. God damn, I love Matt this season. I wish I saw more of him.
Yeah.
And
that's so good.
Yeah. Oh, in the books, Matt didn't get interesting until book three. And I'm glad that he's coming into that.
Yeah.
Matt, we like at the very end, you know, the end, like we think of as Matt a lot sooner.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. And speaking of those, that kind of idea of, you know, coming into your own, like becoming the character, I'm really impressed with this balance of which version of Rand you are. He is everything. Like, I'm this delicate, like, got to make the choices that I have to make, wrestling with himself and the internal, like, what level of good I need to do type of thing that's going on, I think is just so incredibly done. And I'm really impressed with Yosha.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you think about Rand's character in the TV show, he's had, what, 4 extra years in the Two Rivers. And, you know, in the books, he's young and so he's still impressionable and he still has some growing to do, but now he's an adult and so he's set in his ways, and I think he's a little bit more grounded and a lot less shakable.
And it makes it more realistic as opposed to just the Two Rivers folks are stubborn, which was just kind of the answer for everything in the books. Like, this is just so much more dynamic. Which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Anything else we're missing?
Oh, let's see. Well, we talked about it a little bit. Is Moraine stilled or is she shielded?
I think she's shielded.
Or if she's going to die, does it matter?
I think she's still steeled. She's steeled. I think she's stilled. I think she's going to die. And I think this just gives you this lesson of what happens when you're like taken away to give a better essence and storyline for Swan and Lian.
Yeah.
When the tower happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'm trying to think of her character as an arc. And you know, she started out with a single-mindedness on this mission. She executed the mission to a certain extent, and then, you know, worse things happened that she didn't foresee, so she sort of says, okay, now I'm gonna let fate determine it. I'm gonna let go a little bit of it. But she's also going to do this, if our theory is correct, she's going to perform this self-sacrifice that that saves Rand. I'm not sure how satisfied I am with that. I'd have to see it play out, of course, but Like, on one hand, she's trusting fate, and on the other hand, she's also saying, I've got to interfere and do something wild and bold. Mm-hmm. So, like, how do we reconcile that? The control freak, Moiraine, the Moiraine who trusts fate to let it happen, and the Moiraine who makes a sacrifice. I can't connect those dots yet, but
yeah.
I'm sure the show will.
Yeah,
will
come I'm sure that. They'll tell us.
Well, going back to what the sister said about, is it true? Yes. You know, so does she see that there's another option that she has to sacrifice herself to save Rand? And if that is true, then I think she wouldn't even hesitate.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. All right, is that it?
Then, yeah, I think we've covered it. What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, one thing I want to talk about real quick is Min's viewing of Matt killing Rand. Because we talked a little bit about stabbing doesn't mean death, but Min actually said, you kill him. So what do we think that's going to be? Because we know Min's viewings always come true.
I mean,
so is that true for the show?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be not true for the show. It could also be a misidentification. Like they alter that, they make that adjustment a little bit to add a little bit of, you know, flexibility. Yeah. If it happens
this season or if it happens later. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if it happens this season, then it's got to be like someone taking on the guise of Rand and Matt stabbing him.
Yeah, or something.
Because he's not gonna kill Rand, right?
Right.
Above the skies of Falmay, Rand gets stabbed by Ishii. Like maybe there's some kind of prophecy, like his blood needs to spill, and so Matt's like, "Hey, I better stab him."
Maybe. Yeah.
So in the books, the Shadar Logoth dagger was the opposite number of the Dark One's corruption. And so, you know, when Ishamael kind of hit him with the staff in the side and created this wound, a slash with the dagger sort of fought that corruption with its own corruption, and they just fought each other and held each other at bay. I don't think we've established that metaphysics here.
I don't think so either.
I don't think there's a difference between Shadar Logoth's evil and the Dark One's evil. I think they're represented in exactly the same way. So while that would be an interesting theory for it, I don't know if they're going to go in that direction. I'm pretty sure they're not.
So I know I'm just looking forward to Moiraine and Siouan in episode 7. Like, that's
I'm so excited for that. I'm so excited for Egwene. Do we think she probably won't escape? Won't be escaped.
I think that's for the last episode.
Yeah, until 8. So, listen, I am a professional podcaster, okay? I'm very good with my words. So it'll be interesting to see the building of her being broken and the training that she gets in this next episode. That heart breaking bit. Maybe we'll see Perrin again next episode.
I hope so.
Because he wasn't in this one. You know, Matt and Perrin are trading off.
Should arrive in Falm. Yeah. With Avienda.
Are the White Cloaks gonna show up too? I don't know.
I think so.
Let's find out. Yeah.
Here's the other thing that I'm hoping that came from the books. We alluded to it before. So there is a scene in book 2 in The Great Hunt where Rand faces Swan. And we know that's going to happen because we've seen it in the previews. But one of my personal favorite sequences is where Lan basically coaches Rand how to stand up to powerful people, how to be, how to act, how to carry himself, how to be a man. Now, that was a younger Rand in the books.
Yeah.
But And I think Rand does a fairly good job of blustering and standing up for himself anyway. But I would love to see that level of mentorship between Lan and Rand. Because, you know, we missed out on the sword training. We missed out on this sort of Lan's loyalties going towards the Emmonsfield folk because of Nynaeve. And really imparting the sort of wisdom that he has. You know, he is this, he's supposed to be this, this strong, capable guy who can face the Amyrlin, you know, without flinching. And he's and in the books, he imparted some of that to Rand. I'd love to see just a bit of that. Cat walks across the courtyard with arrogance and pride, you know. So I'm hoping we see a little bit of that before that confrontation.
Yep. I love that idea. We'll see. All right. Well, stay tuned to next week when we watch episode 7. Woo! Oh, my goodness. You can find links to follow us online in the show notes or on dragonmount.com. On our website, we have so much great content about the Wheel of Time, including blog posts, chapter and episode summaries, news, as well as links to our YouTube channel that has so many great videos there. Also, on the website and all of our social media, come and celebrate our 25th birthday with us. Today, as we record this, September 19th, 2023, it is our 25th birthday. Dragonmount is 25 years old. Happy birthday! And we are celebrating all over the internet. And we would love to know how you learned about the Wheel of Time, how you found Dragonmount, and kind of what keeps coming you back. Bring this family together and celebrate with us. Also, make sure to check out our Patreon and our shop. Shop.dragonmount.com has a ton of great Dragonmount merch. I may or may not have designed a piece of merch from last show. We'll see if it passes the sniff test and if other people like it. But, you know, stay tuned. Nice. Keep your eyes open. I've been Kathy Campbell.
I've been Rajiv Mote.
And Maureen Carr.
This is not the ending, but it is an ending. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have an absolutely incredible day.